My name is Jessa. One of the things I love the most about working for United Healthcare is that everybody matters. Every moment matters. There's a person behind every problem. I care because it's what I was put on this earth to do.
I'm Ben, and I work at United Healthcare. I am just one piece of a larger puzzle, but every piece matters. It's more than just work. We want to make the healthcare system better for everyone. I care because I want to make a difference. That's what committed to care means to me.
Nerds. Today's episode is sponsored by NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Ever Google a money question and end up 12 tabs deep with 12 different answers? This podcast is your shortcut back to clarity. NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast breaks down financial decisions with a team of trusted journalists. They explain the why behind decisions like investing, home buying, and choosing credit cards with clear, research-backed insights. No jargon, no misinformation. Make your next financial move with confidence. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast on your favorite podcast app.
At Farmers, our honesty is contagious.
Wait, am I going to catch honesty?
Well, when you're with Farmers, it's kind of inevitable.
Well, how long does it take to... I lied to you when you asked if I knew what a deductible was. I don't know my dad's birthday, and I thought umbrella policies were for rainstorms. Actual rainstorms. I have it, don't I?
You don't just have honesty.
You have Farmers. Bum, 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 bum.
Learn more at farmers.com. Underwritten by Farmers Truck or Fire Insurance Exchanges or Affiliate. Products not available in every state.
Baseball fans, think you know who's hitting a homer today? Well, FanDuel is giving you a free chance to call your shot with daily dingers. Joining the action is easy. Just make your free pick on who's hitting a home run in their game, and if you're right, you'll get a profit boost to use on your next bet for a chance at extra winnings. You've got nothing to lose and a lot to gain. And don't forget, you can make a free pick every day during the MLB season. It's just another reason why FanDuel is the home for home runs. So, are you ready to play your game today? Join all the action at FanDuel.com/podcast. That's FanDuel.com/podcast to play daily dingers and make your free pick on who's hitting a homer. Play ball and swing for the fences on FanDuel, an official partner of the MLB.
Must be 21 plus and present in Ohio. First online real money wager only. $5 first deposit required. A bonus issued as non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire 7 days after receipt. Restrictions apply. See terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Welcome to another round of the Best of SDHAM from the Soccer Down Here Network. John Nelson here with you. And for those unfamiliar, SDHAM is the morning show attached to the Soccer Down Here Network, and it is live Monday through Friday, 9:05 a.m. Eastern Time. Traditionally, we're supposed to go 2 hours. Most of the time, we go longer than 2 hours to break down the day, what you might have missed in the overnight. And with our list of guests and pundits and newsmakers, we try to present all the issues of the day and all the stories of the day and what you might be seeing going forward all in one place for you on the SDH Network, available live on YouTube, X, and Twitch. And then afterward, the audio is released as a podcast in whole and with each individual guest and pundit that makes their appearance. So you can register and make sure that you save the information about getting notifications every time that there is something new up on your favorite podcatcher attached to SDH. And also along the line, you can go to our YouTube channel, watch the activity there as well. You can watch it either live or on tape and go back. It is Soccer Down Here on YouTube. Now that we are in MLS regular season play, it's time to catch up with folks that are seeing the matches on a weekly basis. First off, it is time to catch up with the play-by-play voice of the San Jose Earthquakes, Ted Ramey, and get some opposition research. If you're an Atlanta United fan, we ask Ted about the chaos of this matchup in the past, and we ask about San Jose coming out of 2025 and the positive result that they had to start 2026 as they get ready for the matchup with Atlanta United on Saturday night here in match week number 2. Then we follow that up with one of our regulars on SDHAM, Tuesday mornings at 10 Eastern, KCD, and we go through a bunch of different things with Casey traditionally. We'll go over the match that she was at for Apple TV the week before with her play-by-play partner Christian Miles this past week. It is a deep dive into the Houston Dynamo because they were there for the Houston Dynamo match, and the new-look Dynamo coming into 2026. So we look at Mati Bogish, we look at Ace Ace, we look at the roster, and we look at what happened first time out of the blocks as Guilherme got a brace and Houston Dynamo end up with full points. So it's a bit of a deep dive into her match. We go into coaching aspects a little bit, specifically tied to one moment with Chicago Fire that resulted in Chicago's first goal. So we break down those kinds of elements too when Casey comes and visits us on Tuesdays at 10 o'clock. So it is Casey White and it is Ted Ramey. And then because we mentioned Chicago, we bring in the play-by-play voice of the Chicago Fire from WLSAM Radio, Max Anderson. We find out his perspective on the flip side of that matchup, once again looking back at 2025 for Chicago Fire, year two of the Greg Berhalter administration, and then what to expect coming in with CF Montreal visiting town as a decided underdog coming up this weekend. That is the rundown of the show. So without any further ado, it is time to catch up with a play-by-play voice of the San Jose Earthquakes, Ted Ramey, and find out what his thoughts are as we go into yet another matchup involving Atlanta United and the San Jose Earthquakes. All right, time for Oppo Research. I feel like my political science degree just popped back into my head, Ted. It's just like, you know, opposition research, you know, yeah, one of those political movies, like All the President's Men or something. First question for you. What were some of your larger takeaways out of the 2025 season heading into 26 here with San Jose?
So 2025 represented an interesting juxtaposition of various realities because that team doesn't really exist anymore. And that's the hardest thing to really compare to this year is because you had a great offense, one of the best in the league. You had Christian Espinosa, you had Chicho Arango, you had Joseph Martinez, and now those three players are no longer with the team. And so you thought going into the offseason that, okay, this is an offensive heavy team that needs to improve its defense, but then the dynamic totally changed. So it's hard to really tell you a lot about what 2025 meant as it pertains to 2026. That said, it did usher in Bruce Arena taking over the team. You know, the most celebrated coach in the history of American soccer. He has a vision. I think it obviously changed the way the offseason went, but I think that we learned he was willing to play the young players. We saw Reed Roberts get some time last year. He started at center back last week. That was a big moment. Bo LaRue, young player, you know, played, I think, in 29 matches last year. And, you know, he had a start Saturday. So I think we learned a lot about what Bruce Arena is willing to do with the young players, but it's still kind of a work in progress because the big story last year was the Earthquakes attack, and the three players that were the big part of that attack are now gone.
12 exits, 6 entries, and I guess with the fan base, I'll ask it this way. How much of a shell shock was it with the egress and the lack of ingress until somebody walked through gate C last night about 9 o'clock local time?
I think that Bruce Arena was not just in a hurry to get signings for the sake of making signings. I think that he liked a lot of what he had in terms of the young players within the Earthquakes and the Quakes 2 system. And I think that he was willing to rely on a lot of those young players to take a big step forward from year one to year two. I referenced a player like Reed Roberts. There's also Max Floriani. We can talk about Daniel Muni. He's going from year three to year four. So I think that knowing his background and the ability to develop young players, especially on the defensive side, was that something that Bruce Arena was going for. I think there's no, you know, greater point to that than looking at Dave Romney, who back in 2015, when Arena was the head coach of the Galaxy, he was in his first year out of USF, and he was the first player to make it from Los Dos up to the first team. And, you know, Dave Romney has now been a longtime stalwart center back in Major League Soccer, and he can play out wide as well as a fullback if need be. But I think it spoke to what Bruce Arena was willing to do. Now, you referenced the arrival of Timo Werner coming in from Germany and arriving yesterday at SFO. That was a big signing, and I think they knew, even before they didn't know, you know, that they were going to lose certain players, especially Chicho Arango, who signed a new deal with the Quakes and then decided for personal and family reasons that they wanted to, to make a change. I think that they had identified a player with an international pedigree and was somebody that they felt could really kind of transform the attack. And I still think that is there as well. even if some of the pieces that they thought were going to be there aren't there, specifically Chicho Arango. But this is a player who has a very, very high level of experience. He's won all over Europe. He has played with some of the best players in the world. And so right now, I'm really curious to see what he does, especially an Earthquakes team that looked pretty decent offensively in week number one and already looked very, very fast. You add Turbo Timo to the mix, and I don't know if he's going to play this week or even be on the roster. That's yet to be determined. But when he is a part of it, I think it just adds another very dynamic aspect to the Quakes attack.
When you look at, I'm gonna steal that, by the way, Turbo Timo. I'm gonna steal.
It's not mine. It's from Europe, by the way. So I'm stealing it as well.
So then I'm stealing it from you, and you've gotten it from Europe. Yes, proper hydration when it comes to safe guesting. We believe that here as well. So is this, trying to draw a parallel? Is this almost like it? And I'd like to know how this came to pass with Timo Werner coming to San Jose, because that's not necessarily, you'd sit there and you make an instant line and go
right
one to the other. It almost seems like a Thomas Mueller to Vancouver kind of a thing, where you're not under the hot spotlight of the major media market. Mm-hmm. You're kind of off to the side a little bit. You can kind of do your thing. Am I off there when it comes to how this connection was made?
I don't know if the comparison is the same. Not that you're wrong or off per se. I just know that Timo had not been performing up to where he had been previously. I know there had been some injuries along the way and he'd kind of fallen out of form. So it's just a matter of Timo having this opportunity, and maybe he felt that going to a place like the Bay Area, like similar to a place like Atlanta, which is a hotbed of a media market, to where that maybe he's not in as bright a light situation, but he can restart his career and be kind of a focal point to be allowed that opportunity to restart their career. And I don't even know if restart the career is the same way. It's just maybe reset is a better way of looking at it. But no one knew going into the end of last year that Timo was on the Quakes, overall landscape or on the horizon of what they were looking at in terms of players to bring in. I think Bruce Arena knew that he wanted to make big acquisitions to try and change the culture in San Jose. And that's something that he's spoken of, at various moments. So when that name popped up, I believe it was Tommy Scoops, Tom Bogert, who first broke the story about the Quakes talking to Timo. It was kind of like, oh, all right, well, this is a big move. And I think that, not to be cynical, God knows broadcasters were never cynical, but
crazy talk.
But it is a World Cup year. There is an international flair. There are going to be new fans who are going to be paying attention to national teams. And if you bring in a guy who has an association with national teams, who comes from Europe, who's played in these big, big games and big tournaments, fans in San Jose might be able to say, hey, Timo, he's been a big part of that German national team. He's played for big European clubs. I'm now interested in this. The Quakes have a big name, and that helps draw people into the club. And it may not have been that linear, but it doesn't hurt certainly for them to have a player of that pedigree now as a reason for fans who might be drawn in by the World Cup to want to go and see, the San Jose Earthquakes play, whether or not Timo is on the, current German national team. I just think that established names, as much as MLS still wants to be a league that is, developing their own talent and selling to Europe and bringing in South American talent, no greater example than what we saw initially with Almiron with Atlanta, this is a way to do it. Established stars from Europe still draw fans in the United States and North America. And I don't like when people go with the, retirement league and all that stuff. And it's like, well, I watched a lot of players like Messi who can still perform at an extremely high level at the international and the top leagues in the world, play in Major League Soccer. And it didn't look like they were close to retirement at all. Zlatan Ibrahimovic, guess what? He went back to Europe and before the injuries still played at an extremely high level. And I could go on, and I don't need to inform you of this, but I think that fans by proximity, when those big European names come over, they want to go see them.
So is there a rational expectation in addition to an irrational expectation for output for Werner when he shows up this season?
I don't really know how to answer that, because I don't know what his game looks like in Major League Soccer as of yet. Yeah. That said, I do believe when I look at some of the other German players that have come over, it feels like there is a relatively easy transition that happens with some of the German guys. You look at you know, Mueller in Vancouver is no greater example. But I just kind of feel like those guys come in ready to go, and that might be part of the German culture where they're very timely, they're on schedule, and they don't come over and, you know, have the belly to get rid of and get back in shape. I expect Timo to come over and be able to hit the ground running. But if I were to be optimistic, I would love for him to be a double-digit goal-type scoring guy and provide more, you know, just of that speed dynamic for San Jose. You know, I heard some people talking about that at certain stages of his time in Europe that he started to have the yips and couldn't put the ball on frame. You know, I have no idea about, you know, things like that. I don't think something like shooting at net versus like what we would think of a shortstop going to first. I think those are two widely different versions of the quote unquote the yips. So I'll have to see. But, you know, if I don't even know if it's, you know, wildly overreaching or, you know, pretty baseline to think that he's the type of guy who could score double digit goals in Major League Soccer. And if he does that, I think that's only going to improve every other aspect of the Quakes offense, because he would provide something to worry about. And that would allow, you know, more opportunities for other guys out there on the pitch for San Jose.
Golden tones of Ted Ramey hanging out with us for opposition research. I never thought in my brain, but of course, me thinking about my brain, I would have Timo Werner, Bart, and Steve Sachs all in the same triangle as you were discussing what's going on in 2025 with Timo Werner. Last week, I did not have, by the way, and I don't know if anybody did, and if they did, more power to them. If they had Daniel Muni and a brace, look, if somebody had triple captained Muni and had him, you know, on their fantasy team, A, I want to know who you are. B, I want to draft off of you in a NASCAR sense to figure out what your picks are going to be like. What was it like to see the match unfold the way that it did for you against Sporting Kansas City last week?
Last year, up to the point where Daniel Muni scored his first two goals, there had been various moments in his career where he'd had headers just either be saved, pushed over the bar by the goalie, or, you know, just had moments where he was there and putting good shots on frame. So the second one, the header, was, you know, just that was a fun moment. The first one, that's a poacher's special. But Daniel Muni, since the minute he came to San Jose, I have felt like he is a quote-unquote star in the making, and I would not be surprised if in the future he does get the opportunity with the national team, because he is deceptively fast. I think people are now starting to recognize him more of the athlete that he is. I've talked to the guys about, you know, they've watched him go golf and they're just kind of mortified by how natural his swing is. He's a natural athlete and he's a sports nut, by the way. Like, he wants to talk about the Blues. He wants to talk about the Cardinals. You go down the list. You know, he wants to talk about every sport. He's an Indiana Hoosier, loves college football and college basketball. You know, I was texting with him during the college national championship game this year, but he is a guy who, now that he's lost a little bit of the baby fat from his face, because he was, you know, drafted as a kid out of Indiana, you know, the difference between him then and now, engaged, you know, he's, and I don't say this to be cute, but he was, you know, a kid coming out of college, and now he's a man. He's added some muscle. He has always been fast, but, you know, I would say now he's probably in the category of one of, if not the fastest center back in the league. And he's got a voice that, the first time I interviewed him, I got ticked off because I was like, your voice is deeper and better than mine. I was like, come on, man. Like, you're already a professional athlete. You really have to just put me down here in our first ever interview. But he has star qualities, and I am not going to be surprised if he is one of the breakout players. Like, I don't know if he's going to become Walker Zimmerman or something to that extent, but I would not be surprised if we saw a rapid ascent from him, because he has the athletic ability. He has kind of that eye for the moments. And I think that last year people can say, oh, the Earthquakes offense was Earthquakes defense was leaky. And yeah, they gave up over 60 goals. You're going to get that label put upon you. But I don't think it was specifically because of Daniel Muni. I think it was because the Quakes got caught out in a stretched out defense and transition and got put in a lot of one-on-one emergency defending situations, which led to them conceding goals. But, you know, Muni has a star ability about him. And while I don't expect, you know, a lot of braces from him, I'm not going to be surprised if we see more goals, and I'm not going to be surprised if we see more team of the match day appointments from him as we get deeper into this season and his career.
So then I guess now, once again, equivalence coming into the conversation. So Muni is, for the week anyway, a quarterback from Indiana University, and that makes Bruce Arena Kurt Cignetti.
Yes. That's a good pull. And, you know, we wait for more of these storylines and comparisons to create themselves, because they are fun, at least for guys like us.
Yep. So injuries leaning into the Atlanta match. What's the report card from the hospital ward coming into this matchup this weekend?
Last week, what we knew was that Edwin Mendoza, young midfielder, and Earl Edwards Jr. were dealing with lower body injuries. Haven't had the big update as of yet. If there was a big injury, I have a feeling at this point somebody would have whispered in my ear. I have not had anything like that, so you can feel like everyone's ready to go. I spoke with Benji Kikanovich yesterday, who was the starting right back for the San Jose Earthquakes on Saturday against Sporting Kansas City. He was stoked and ready to go. He was talking about how fast, you know, they are on the wings with him on the right side. DeJuan Jones this year playing on his natural left. Talked about Jamar Ricketts as the left wing. Useni Buda. You had Timo into the mix. And there's a lot of pace out there, especially Reed Roberts, Daniel Muni, like I was just talking about. So, you know, no one popped a hammy out of week one or anything like that, if that's the answer you were looking for.
Yeah, and it was very, very Stanley Cup playoffs of you to sit, you know, lower body injury. Okay, I get it. We're already in Stanley Cup playoffs mode when we're talking about injuries.
You know, I work for the Sharks too, right?
Oh yeah. That's it. Look, man,
that's what it says. I noticed this, I think, around 2017, 2018, that the lower body, upper body worked its way into the soccer vernacular. And I was like, really? Are we doing this here now as well? We can't just, because, you know, it's like if you see a guy go shoulder first into the boards, it's like, I'm pretty sure they just separated their shoulder and upper body. It's like, all right, I guess we're playing this game where we can pretend we don't know what the injury is. And now it's snuck into soccer. Mm-hmm. And, you know, when a guy's running, they grab the back of their leg, you know, yeah. 9 times out of 9, that's a hamstring injury.
Yeah. Yeah. That is a lower body injury. You know, it's somebody shoots a dart and it ends up, you know, you see the dart coming out of the back of the hamstring. Yes. That is a lower body injury. I would anticipate as much.
It's very broadly termed.
Yes. And so I'm guessing also that Bruce Arena might have a little bit of something to do with that too. You don't want to give away too much for the opposition coming to town. True. You know, with Atlanta, it is a work in progress. They did not get the full exhibition schedule because of Mother Nature, who always remains undefeated in our proceedings. And so you kind of got to see some building blocks against against your first opponent, and you got to hang around for 80 minutes with FC Cincinnati. I'm intrigued with this because of what you can see from Miguel Almiron, Alexi Miranchuk, now apparently healthy, going up against this young defense. I'm intrigued with that matchup, especially on the left-hand side of the defense for San Jose going up against the attacking right for Atlanta United here.
Yeah, and obviously with Almiron out there, even though he's not the most natural wide player, you have to worry about him coming from the outside in. He's very dangerous. And I will give Atlanta a lot of credit because I think the 2-0 scoreline was not indicative of how that game really played the entire way. I know that Evander goes down with injury and that changes the entire dynamic, but that's one of 11. And when did the two goals come in? The 72nd and 81st, something like that? Is that?
You're in there.
Yeah. And it's like, I did not see a team, and I know FC Cincinnati's had great success, you know, in pretty much since they got over their rough start in Major League Soccer, and they've been a consistently high performing team, but I didn't think Atlanta got played off the field or anything like that. The young defender, it's pronounced Baez, correct?
Yes, Elias Baez, yes.
Yeah, I'm looking to see more out of him. I'm really curious to see how he develops. But one of the things that I'm really curious about with the mentality of this team, and it helps that a guy like Almiron is back, but moving on from Brad Guzan is very hard to do, not just as a franchise icon, and, you know, obviously a U.S. icon as well, and I've interviewed him before, and just, you know, one of the all-time dudes. I've never met anyone who has a negative thing to say about him, but, you know, in terms of organizing the defense, that's something that he knew how to do as well as anyone. You know, the moral backbone, the fact that he came back ahead of schedule from the Achilles injury, you know, all the things that we associate with him, when that leaves a franchise, it's just like the Earthquakes when Wondolowski left. You know, like that is a change that takes time. It doesn't happen overnight to have that heart and soul of the club. And I'm not, you know, it was difficult when Martinez left the club. I was aware of that, but he was not the same guy after the knee injury. You know, Almiron gets the chance to go over to Europe. No one's going to begrudge him for that. But because Brad had been there for so long and was, you know, just such a pillar of the franchise. You know, I'm just curious to see how the team adapts and changes because there is, you know, nothing quite like that, especially when it's a netminder. You know, like that's a big, big change for any franchise to make.
You bring in Lucas Hoyos to be there with Jaden Hibbert in the battle of A and B. Jaden Hibbert gets the starts late last year. And so now, either way, you have the experienced voice with Lucas Hoyos to help Jaden Hibbert in his growth, or have the other be there for the extended competitions and such, mm-hmm. and the competitions in the week. So we're looking forward to that. Traditionally, when these two teams meet, it is chaos. And
yes.
You could spell it with a K. I mean, I don't care how you spell chaos. It can go either way. Since this is the 10th season for Atlanta United, it is what we refer to as, you know, we've done a thing at SDH on top 10 moments. And one of the top 10 moments I said when we were doing our season preview was Five Stripes After Dark with San Jose, where it was one of the most chaotic matches ever. It ends up 4-3. You have a goal that's called back. You go, you know, and all these kinds of things.
Yeah.
Are you expecting another round of the Agents of Chaos, or are you open call?
Yeah. I've talked about this at length. If you go back to the first meeting at 2017 at Bobby Dodd Stadium, that was another great performance, which, by the way, I know that that's an outdoor stadium, but that's the loudest environment that I've ever broadcast from. Just, and you know, an old building like that, the sound bounces around differently. Before the game, there was a lightning and thunderstorm, yeah, which, you know, for people who are not from, who haven't been to the East Coast, or Californians like me, you know, and my dad's told me this because he was a broadcaster as well. He's like, oh yeah, he's like, you get to the East Coast, just the afternoon thunder shower, it rolls through, and then, you know, you play your game later. But that first game, of which there were also red cards, was mm-hmm. a wild performance. Mm-hmm. The first meeting at Mercedes-Benz Stadium, there were red cards in that. I think the Earthquakes went down a man early, and then I may have been Martinez who scored late. The late goals in 2023, the Quakes take a 1-0 lead in the season opener late into the game, and I love it. You know, I, you know, think that when these two teams meet, I always talk about that game you referenced from 2018 where I say, oh, you, the game where the Quakes went up 4-1 and then lost 4-3. Yeah, I remember that game. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it was great fun. But back to that first game in 2017 at Bobby Dodd, I was texting the board op during that pregame, and I was in a panicked mood because like 20 minutes before the game, as you know, not the newest stadium in the world there, Bobby Dodd, my internet, just the line went down. Whoa. Notice I'm saying the line, and I couldn't connect. And then the engineering there did mad work underneath there, just kind of, you know, screwing around with wires. They got me back up because I thought we were going to have to go over the phone or something, reconnected. But I had to text the board up. I was like, I cannot hear you over my headset. You're just going to have to text me when I'm on air. And so that's how it went. And we had to go through that, but great experience at that, you know, at the old building and at the new building, just a beautiful, beautiful stadium. But it's great chaos with a K, and I'm hoping for more of it just because it is so much fun when these two teams meet.
So if you would please, sir, cut the promo for us, for those that want to listen, not just on this moment, but all the other moments when it comes to your calls with the Quakes, hit me.
So you can go on Apple TV this week where the game will be broadcast and choose the home radio broadcast. You'll be able to hear me and Earthquakes legend Joe Cannon on the call. And you can also go to the website for 810 KSFO here in the Bay Area, and you can stream the call there. And then if you want to follow me on socials, just search Ted Ramey, R-A-M-E-Y. Just look for the bald bearded guy smiling and holding a microphone. It's pretty easy to figure out which one is me. But yeah, I mean, we have a great time calling the Earthquakes games. This is year 13 for Joe Cannon and I together, and we have a great time during every broadcast. And I always tell people that, you know, Major League Soccer is continuing to be an evolving and improving league. Each year gets that much more fun. And if people are curious, after seeing that first win for San Jose in week number one, or a very high level performance from Atlanta in week number one, then I think we're in for a really good matchup on Saturday afternoon when these two teams meet.
Great to see you, my friend. Thanks for the Oppo research. We will be reaching out all season long. Thanks for dropping by.
Anytime. Thank you.
My name is Jessa. One of the things I love the most about working for United Healthcare is that everybody matters. Every moment matters. There's a person behind every problem. I care because it's what I was put on this earth to do.
I'm Ben, and I work at United Healthcare. I am just one piece of a larger puzzle, but every piece matters. It's more than just work. We want to make the healthcare system better for everyone. I care because I want to make a difference. That's what committed to care means to me.
Nerds!
Today's episode is sponsored by NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Personal finance can feel like a pop quiz you didn't study for. This podcast is your study guide. On NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast, you'll hear from trusted journalists who explain the why behind major financial decisions. You'll get research-backed insights and clear pros and cons, whether you're planning a big purchase or just want to grow your wealth. Make your next financial move with confidence. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast on your favorite podcast app.
At Farmers, our honesty is contagious.
Wait, am I going to catch honesty?
Well, when you're with Farmers, it's kind of inevitable.
Well, how long does it take to... I lied to you when you asked if I knew what a deductible was. I don't know my dad's birthday, and I thought umbrella policies were for rainstorms. Actual rainstorms. I have it, don't I?
You don't just have honesty.
You have Farmers. Bum, ba, bum, 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 bum.
Learn more at Farmers.com. Underwritten by Farmers Truck or Fire Insurance Exchanges or Affiliate. Products not available in every state.
Baseball fans, think you know who's hitting a homer today? Well, FanDuel is giving you a free chance to call your shot with daily dingers. Joining the action is easy. Just make your free pick on who's hitting a home run in their game, and if you're right, you'll get a profit boost to use on your next bet for a chance at extra winnings. You've got nothing to lose and a lot to gain. And don't forget, you can make a free pick every day during the MLB season. It's just another reason why FanDuel is the home for home runs. So, are you ready to play your game today? Join all the action at FanDuel.com/podcast. That's FanDuel.com/podcast to play daily dingers and make your free pick on who's hitting a homer. Play ball and swing for the fences on FanDuel, an official partner of the MLB.
Must be 21 plus and present in Ohio. First online real money wager only. $5 first deposit required. A bonus issued as non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire 7 days after receipt. Restrictions apply. See terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
As always, it's great to catch up with Ted, and you never know where it's going to go. You know, mentioning rapid transit, mentioning Los Angeles Dodgers second baseman, mentioning you name it, and bring it, and hockey there. All of that across the bow when Ted comes and visits. It's always great to catch up with him. You can listen to him on the Sharks games as well, in addition to his calls of the San Jose Earthquakes. You're listening to the best of SDHAM on the Soccer Down Here Network. John Nelson here with you. Next up, Tuesday mornings, 10 a.m. Eastern Time. We catch up with Casey White, and we find out what is on her mind when it comes to the matchup that she got to be a part and parcel of for Apple TV on the weekend past. We kind of preview where her matchup is going to be and what her early studies and thoughts are leading into that particular matchup. And there's a reason that we have her after Ted Ramey, wink, wink. And then, once again, coaching aspects and anything that comes across our bow that we get to catch up with Casey White. So here's Casey White and our conversation about Major League Soccer, match week one, heading in to match week two. KCD.
Hi, good morning.
Yeah, see, are you digging this 10 o'clock thing a lot better than the 9:15 from last season?
I am. You know, early in the week after travel, that extra little time just really puts me back together. So thank you, John.
Oh absolutely. No worries. So how's the Orange Fitness contest going, by the way?
It's going great. We did not plan this, people. I have my Orange Theory jacket on today. But it's going great. And I didn't realize like how many broadcasters actually do Orange Theory. I did it in my low 30s for like 5 years straight. And I took a break. I'm back. So I'm loving it.
Okay, just checking, because for those that may not know or may not follow KCD on her socials, she is in an Orange Fitness contest challenge kind of thing with friends and who might be turning into frenemies at this point. So that's you are far braver than I am when it comes to this stuff. All right, so I want to start our discussion on Major League Soccer this week with your match.
Okay.
And what we're going to do is, as a part of the discussion, I want to play the goal calls that you and Christian Miles had at Hell in a Shell and walk through those individual moments within the context of what you got to see from Chicago and Houston in match week one, because Chicago, it's year two under Greg Berhalter, not a whole lot of changes, right. But for Ben Olsen in Houston, the metric crap ton of changes. And it showed it bits and pieces, because, you know, it's like, okay, you know, you've got the "Hello, my name is" tag here on your forehead, trying to figure out, okay, where does this person want this ball at this time? So as we got into the game itself, what kind of a match were you anticipating after you got the chance to catch up with both coaches and get the feel of the place?
Both coaches sent the message that they were going to press really high, put teams under the opposition under a lot of pressure. And we didn't really see that necessarily from the beginning, which I expected, though, because it being the first game of the year, there was energy, but still trying to figure out, like you said, partnerships, how that was going to work and everything. But what we didn't expect was a different system from Greg Berhalter. He went into a wingback system. There was the absence of Jonathan Bamba, Andrew Gutman, Jack Elliott. So there were a lot of big players missing for the Chicago Fire. So they actually adapted from a defensive side into a different shape. So that kind of threw a little bit of a kink in things early on of like, how were they going to match up, was a little bit more unexpected than we originally thought.
And you didn't get anything on the board until the 31st minute, and it ended up with Chicago getting the first goal on the board. Hugo Kuypers gets the first score of the season, and you might recognize the voices on this one, courtesy of our friends at Apple TV and Major League Soccer.
Zviatchenko. Bogush. Oh, and it's a big giveaway from the ball. It's opened up. It's Kuypers. One against two. Hugo Kuypers, and it's Kuypers! Absolutely brilliant from the Belgian. He's back, and the Fire start in brilliant fashion. 1-0.
And he makes no mistake the second time he gets into the final third. He goes in the 1v1, faces up in the back line, and goes with the left foot. A lot of players would go to that far post, but he realizes he just has to beat Jonathan Bond as he's stepping towards him. He goes with power, and he puts it away.
All right. That was an awful giveaway by Matti Bogush. I don't care what anybody says. That was bad news. That was bad news Bears stuff from Bogush out of the blocks.
It was. The second it happened, and like, there's not a live camera in our
you need one. You need
it. It would be great. Sometimes we'll video ourselves just to like get some inside footage for everybody. But my head just went like this. And still, credit to Kuypers. He had to go 40, 50 yards and be able to score a goal. But Jack McGlynn had given it to Bogush for a second time and was trying to get into an advanced position. But yet Zviatchenko was all the way wide. So then everything was so expansive. So that kind of, you have to protect the ball there. So it was definitely a bad giveaway, but Kuypers did a great job in the 1v1. I was pretty impressed. I did not think it was going to turn into a goal. I thought it was going to be a bit of a iffy moment, but the goal was really nice from him.
I need you to put your coach's hat on for a second.
Let's do it.
Okay. So proper weight on passes. This is something that I have seen in pressing situations that has turned into turnovers and has turned into moments going back the other way. So what I mean by this is, on offense, I am seeing more often than not, and it might be just something as simple as getting adjusted to the surface that you're playing on and understanding, is it wetter than normal? Is it wetter than it was when I was there initially? Is nothing happening? How do I lay this out on this surface compared to others that I'm used to? I'm seeing in soccer across the board more passes that don't have the correct weight on them turning into opportunities the other way. How do you remind players, or how do you reinforce the idea of making sure that, okay, that's a great idea, but I need you to you know, have your head screwed on straight here and make sure that the proper weight is there so we can maintain possession?
One of the things that has to be communicated to players at all levels is that part of communication is the type of ball you give. It doesn't always have to be verbal. So if I'm playing a ball as simply as take the weight of it out, but to your right foot, I am telling you most likely that there's pressure off your left side. That's how good I should be technically and in my decision-making of how I distribute balls to you. So direction is important. Pace of pass is important. So sometimes when a player is going to be under a lot of pressure, I don't put as much pace on the ball and you've got to put your foot through it just to get it out. I might be more of a set type of pass. That's not a pass, rather than getting it to you quick with pace where you've got to control it under pressure and then be able to clear. So you really can communicate through the way that you distribute. And that's something that I think is a constant reminder for players.
Okay. Cause that's, and me as the novice of the two of us here, seeing improper weight on a pass and seeing it picked off in a transition opportunity is driving me crazy. And so
I'm with you. I think there's even more to it. Honestly, John, like, I don't blame like a Jack McGlynn in this moment, but I also think he's a good enough player to know that Sviatchenko is all the way wide and the other center back was not coming all the way across, Carlos. Mm-hmm. So I think he should have stayed underneath Bogusz, personally, in my opinion, because of the shape of the team. But Bogusz at the professional level has to realize behind him, Jack McGlynn's moving. So he didn't look. He just kind of went into autopilot and just like played it backwards when no one was available. So there's a lot that went wrong in that moment. And it wasn't Antonio Carlos coming over and defending at the last minute 1v1. He was having to just make up for everything else that had happened above him.
Okay. Yeah, I just had another moment drive me crazy. And that was why, like, I've got to ask you about this. And literally it's like, oh, I have crazy. I can ask her about this. Okay. So 1-0 at the break. 1-0 at the break. And you're wondering about any kind of halftime adjustments. What were you and Christian talking about in the booth getting ready for the second 45 from what you saw in the first 45?
One of the big things that I really felt that the Dynamo had to do was figure out, one, how to get Guilherme on the ball. And we talked about it in the first half that Zinkernagel was much more involved as the opposition 10 for the Chicago Fire, and therefore the Fire were more dangerous. And I felt that if Guilherme got on the ball in the second half, he could do that. But how? There was a big pocket of space behind Davila of the Fire, which was right in front of that back line of four, or it actually ended up being five at times. That space in front of Joel Waterman was a really big space, but how Guilherme and Ponce manipulated that together, I felt was going to be really important. So if Ponce comes to the ball, Guilherme's got to go, and vice versa, to make Chicago make decisions. Because in the first half, they didn't ask any questions of the Chicago Fire back line.
And they did in the second 45, and we have the evidence to prove it. Starting in the 67th minute, and I mentioned to folks in our open when I was teasing your Tuesday visit, the one call, I think it's this first goal coming up, where you were almost clairvoyant. You had the soothsayer hat on, the fortune teller hat on, and literally you're talking about Ezequiel Ponce and connecting with Guilherme, and I'm like, oh-ish, she had that nailed. So here's the call and the setup for it that made it 1-1. Guilherme's first goal on the evening at Hell in a Shell, once again courtesy of our friends at Apple TV and Major League Soccer.
Only 1-5 of those here on home soil in 2025. Here's Ponce.
But that's what I like from Ponce right there, and this is why.
Short, short, long. Guilherme, he's in. He's gotten goal side. This could be it. Guilherme! Welcome to Major League Soccer! Brazilians! And the designated payer pays off.
Bring the crowd to their feet, and this is the coordinated movement we were talking about, where Ponce goes in, Guilherme gets into the back line, but it's that touch across the body of the defender. It eliminates Sam Rogers in this moment. Right there, he has to foul him, or he has to let him go, and let him go he does as Guilherme takes it across his body. This is textbook 1v1 dribbling and finishing from the front runner.
Composure, accuracy, deadly.
All right, yes, yeah, so you had that nailed.
I absolutely loved this goal. I was so excited when this happened because it was the coach in me that at halftime I was talking about coordinated movement and pull out Waterman, pull out the center backs. Like, they've got to do something to make them uncomfortable. And yes, Jack McGlynn had to technically execute a pass from 20, 25 yards to set up Guilherme, but it was all that movement before. Then there was so much in the finish and the dribbling. I just thought this was an all-around tactically sound goal and technically executed very well on all fronts.
Yeah, and like I said, as I was seeing that play back, I'm like, yep, she sees this in three dimensions. It's literally, she's playing Vulcan chess here on that one. That tied it up at one. And it only took 11 minutes for Guillerme to get his second. I did not have him on my fantasy team. I probably should going forward, especially if what we saw is going to be the norm. So here's the second goal on the board. 11 minutes apart, Guillerme gets a brace. Once again, Apple TV, Major League Soccer.
Who's that? Bogusz, head up. Lovely first touch. Turn and fire. Belted in Guillerme. He cleans up the mess. Houston skyrocketing in Space City, USA. It's the Dynamo 2, the Chicago Fire 1.
In Houston, Texas, and there should be that because look at that touch from Ezequiel Ponce. It's a great save from Chris Brady, but the tracking just not occurring for the Chicago Fire. Love the follow-up from Guillerme as he goes in. He keeps it low. He's the one that's alert, and so often the most alert in the penalty box, whether it's defensively or attacking-wise, they're the ones that reap the benefits, and it's the Houston Dynamo in this moment as they take the lead.
I've never been alert before, so you know, for those who have been alerts, I'd love to know what that's like.
My 10 a.m. time gets me more alert here, so we're good.
That makes one of us. I'll bestow that upon you. All right, so break down this second goal for us for Guillerme and what separated Houston in this one in the second half.
Hunger. It looked like hunger for me in the second half, and that's not a knock on the Chicago Fire. They're up 1-0. It's kind of interesting how you attack the second half, but they did not look ready to go. And the Dynamo, even Bogusz, who didn't end up scoring, he hit the post at one point. Ponce, I thought, had a pretty lively first half for the Dynamo. But the second half, all three of them just looked hungry. And what I mean by that is, like, their movements to get the ball. They went and got it themselves. They weren't hesitant off the dribble. They were just constantly moving and going all over the field, especially in the attacking third. And in this goal, yes, the alertness I touched on from Guillerme, where Chicago had just made subs off the right side and they didn't seem alert enough, and Guillerme was. But Ponce, the touch he made, like as he's twirling around with pressure in the box between two defenders, unreal. And none of that happens if he's not able to bring that down so softly. And when you bring it down softly, defenders kind of freeze. They're kind of like, oh, that was pretty good. I can't just destroy you in the box now. And so he gets the shot off. And it was a great goal. And I have to give Christian Miles shout outs on these goal calls. I thought he was, well, I was going to say brilliant. He said Brazilians from Guillerme, and I about lost it. I thought it was like the best thing ever. It's on social media now. And but Christian's such a joy to work with. But he had some great calls on that as well.
So I'll have to remember Brazilian. We'll have that as a hashtag.
It was amazing. I loved it.
All right. So starting 11s in this matchup for Houston, it was Jonathan Bond in net and listed as something 3-4-3-ish, but whenever the whistle blows, that's perfectly fine. Halter, Carlos, Fiachenko at the back, Anali, McGlynn, Buzat, Holmes in the midfield, and then your attacking three, Guillerme, Ponce, and Mati Bogusz. Guillerme finishes with a 9 even, courtesy of our friends at SofaScore. And on the day, 2 goals, XG of 0.77, 2 shots, expected goals on target, 1.14, 2 shots on target. So he basically was economy of action when it came to his movement. 23-29 passing, it was 14-16 in his own half, hit 2 long balls on the day. On the dribble, 57 touches for Guillerme, 2 for 2 on the dribble. And total carrying distance, 249.5 meters. Longest progressive carry was just over 24 meters on the day. And so Guillerme making the most of what he did in the second half. Chicago, this was what I thought was really interesting. Chicago's starting lineup. Brady, Haile Selassie, Mbokazi, Waterman, Rogers, and Barroso was your back fives, 5-4-1-ish-ish,
yeah.
If you want to call it that, till the whistle blows. Zinker, Nagel, Davila, Saletros, Robin Lud, and then Kuipers up top. Three of the five at the back registered less than a 6 on SofaScore in their ratings. Haile Selassie, Mbokazi, and Waterman. And Robin Lud got a 5.9 as well. So not a good day at the office for a team that wrapped up at 6.39 on SofaScore on the whole.
I think you know this about me, and most people do. Like, I'm not, like, overly critical. I think it's the coach brain in me because there's so much that can happen in a game. But I thought Robin Lud was disappointing in this game, and I have to be honest about that. We all know what he can do, and I don't expect that to go throughout an entire season because his body of work does not show disappointment. It shows the ability to impact. But he was not overly impactful in this game, so I'm not surprised by that. In a lot of ways, I don't think the back line was that bad from the Chicago Fire. They had two moments. But if we watch the whole first half, they were in control. They only had to clear one off the line. They had massive possession, and a lot of that was the back line distributing. But everyone forgets about the first half. If the second half goes the other way, no one cares anymore. And that's a big lesson for players. And they know that, but sometimes you just got to be reminded of it, that half done isn't done. And I think they got caught out.
Defensive contributions for Robin Lud, I can count on one finger. One defensive contribution, it was a clearance, three recoveries, 3 of 11 on duels on the evening, 3 of 10 on the ground, 3 fouls. He had 1 dribble passed. This will be a question that I will ask each and every time this season in this segment. And this, once again, is the coach hat being put on you from these two teams. We're going to have Max Anderson, play-by-play voice of the Fire, coming on tomorrow. But no match that you win is 100% good. No match that you lose is 100% bad. So if we look at these building blocks and look at Houston winning, okay, yeah, great, fine. But what do they need to work on from week to week that you saw in this matchup?
Well, I'll start with Chicago. One thing we have to remember is they were missing 3 pretty critical players for their team. And so the fact that they started the way they did, like, I was pretty impressed. But when Bamba comes back in, when Gutman comes back in, and Jack Elliott, that's a different team. So I don't think it's all doom and gloom for the Chicago Fire because of that. It's just the way it unfolded was something that I'm sure Greg Berhalter is not overly ecstatic with. If I was that staff, I would be more talking about the mentality of how do you protect the lead? How do you not stop playing at halftime because you have the 1-0 lead? So I think that's the improvement. Some of the positives of their game was their possession early on, was their ability to get their top players on the ball and make the Dynamo chase. So that you kind of focus on that when you lose. It's like, what were we doing well? Mm-hmm. For the Dynamo, it was a little concerning that they didn't touch the ball. For it was a 70% possession advantage about 20, 25 minutes in for the Chicago Fire. That is not how Ben Olsen wants to play. He does want to commit higher up the field. He has made that very obvious in his speaking with us that he wants to put teams under pressure. There was none of that to be seen in the first half. But I think both of these teams will go, this is early season, early days. It's okay, but this didn't look like what we want to look like for an entire 90 minutes. We got it for 45. Next week, we need it for at least 60. The next week, we need it for 75, and you kind of grow from there.
And the numbers ended up 57-43 in possession, as you said, that it was like way stilted, and then it wrapped up at 57-43. One of the other things that stuck out to me was that there were 31 fouls called in the match, 20 fouls on Chicago in this match. Is that more a byproduct of not having the likes of a Gutman and a Bamba and an Elliott, or was that state of play with what Houston was getting able to, being able to do, especially in the second half?
I think there was a little bit of frustration in some of those fouls from Chicago. I'll be honest with you, though, John, I didn't realize, I saw the stats after the game of the fouls, but it didn't feel super choppy, to be honest, calling the game, even though there was quite a few fouls. Mm-hmm. I think a lot of that is early season too. You're just a little off with your stepping defensively. You hit someone late. Then there's the mentality piece that comes in and the emotion piece that can come in when you're up a goal, down a goal, whatever it may be. So I think that's more of the factor there.
KCD, where she be at home after recovering from Chicago and Houston, breaking down this matchup and anything else on her mind in Major League Soccer. What'd you think of Mighty Bogish first time out coming back into Major League Soccer?
first half or second half? That's how I feel about this game.
Yes.
That's yes. how I feel about this game in general. Like, which team do you want me to talk about when and which yes. player? Because it completely is different based on the half. And that isn't always the case. Bogusz, I was really pleased with how he worked his way into the game. He just looked more intentional in the second half. I still don't think it's at his full level of how he can contribute. But when I say intentional, the eye test is basically someone floating around, not so intentional, and hoping the ball comes to them, and then they create. And I felt him and Guillerme were like that in the first half. The second half, when a ball bounces down off someone's head or off someone's foot, someone's just immediately there to clean it up. That's the intentionality that I saw from Bogusz in the second half. And it set him up to be more involved in the game. Therefore, he was able to dribble penetrate a little bit more and create things. It was still kind of few and far between for me, but you could see the remnants of just the impact that he can have.
How was the crowd in Houston for a match day one? Because you and Christian went into a market where, you know, you could be winning, and for whatever reason, it has been tough sledding to get butts in seats there at Hell in a Shell. What was it like there in the atmosphere?
We went down to the field about an hour before kick.
Got your picture taken. I saw that.
Did. Oh, my gosh. That's how I feel like a player again. I'm like, I've got to go down and touch the grass. Like, otherwise, I'll just be sitting in a booth and, like, feel removed from the game. So we went down there, and you basically come out and you walk through the area where all the fans are. And it was packed an hour before the game in the tunnels, you know, or the tunnels or underneath, whatever you want to call it. Yeah. And you could feel the energy going down to the field. No one was in the stadium when we were down there because they were all, you know, getting food and getting drinks and all that. We go back up to the booth, and I felt like the first half was lacking in some ways, but the Dynamo didn't have the ball. Like, there was one opportunity in the first half. When the second half occurred, you could tell that everyone was hopeful. Everyone was into it. It was loud when the goals went in. So I felt the atmosphere really grew with how the Dynamo grew. And when you get a result, obviously as a fan base, and the Houston Dynamo are going to hope that goes into the next time they have a home game, and that can help them again.
Okay. Where are you next time?
I am going to San Jose this weekend. San Jose, Atlanta. So a lot of my prep is starting this afternoon and tomorrow for that game. I've done all my, like, looking back. Now we're about to start looking forward. I'm excited. I get Atlanta United, but on the road, so I can't come say hi to you guys.
Jason, Mike and Jason will be there, so you get to say hi to them.
Okay, that's great. So that will be on Saturday, and a really interesting matchup. I haven't dug into the tactics yet or watched full games of this past weekend, but a team in San Jose that didn't dominate in possession, but wins 3-0. And then you've got Atlanta United, who gave up two late goals, but there were some good performance pieces. So I think it's going to be a pretty tight matchup, but I'll be interested to dive into exactly how I think that's going to look.
Yeah, I did not, by the way, have the goal scorers for San Jose on the bingo card under any circumstance.
Nobody did.
I was like, I mean, Sporting Kansas City, you know, they're still trying to grab folks and sit there and go, you know, serving 27. Hey, you got some spare time? Come on in.
I know.
But I did not have Muni scoring an almost immediate brace. On my bingo card. Defender gets a brace. I did not have that marked down.
I don't want to say mark my words, but, like, does that happen again this entire year for him? Like not in a bad way, but, okay, he might score a goal on a corner kick and go up, but twice, pretty impressive. He's having a good start, and great for the Quakes, though.
Yes. It was 3 goals in 12 minutes for the Quakes. Daniel Muni scores in the 42nd. Preston Judd scores at 45+1. Then Muni scores again in the 54th, 3-0. And Sporting Kansas City, it might be a long year. You going out there, when are you leaving, Thursday or Friday?
Leaving early Friday morning. Gain those 3 hours back, have the majority of the day there on Friday, and then we'll have the Saturday kick, come back Sunday. So I'm excited. You know, this is part of Christian and I being together. Like, we've got some middle of the country games. We've got a few East Coast. We've got a few West Coast. So I'm going to his neck of the woods this weekend. It'll be an easy travel day for him, and should be fun.
Yeah, and we definitely need the intel on Christian and how he is on the road, what he eats. We need all the background intel on Christian that you, as you develop your file as we go here. Safe travels.
Thank you.
Pretty much what we did this week, we're going to be doing all season long. So take this template, cut it out.
Perfect.
John's going to have weird questions. We'll roll through the goals and take a look at where you've been and where you're going. So this is us. Say hi to Owen. Glad you're back. And he's probably going to grab you and go, it's like, no, we got it. We got stuff to do. So.
This is the highlight of my week. He can hang out. It's totally fine. I don't want to rush it ever. And he's the most chill dog besides like the one time he barked.
And the studio audiences are fine. And when he goes out and hangs out in the snow and does all those things. Casey, as always, it's great to catch up with you here on Tuesdays. Be safe. And we will catch up with you next week for Atlanta San Jose coverage. This
sounds great.
Interesting. Be good. We'll see you soon.
Bye.
There goes KCD. Where'd she be? She'd be next week at PayPal Park. And she's going to look at the airport. So she gets to fly into the airport and stare at it. She's going to stare at the San Jose airport the entire time and go, the airport's right there. And I can't, oh, wow. That's going to be, oh, that's right. San Jose has a flight restriction. It's like they don't leave town after like 10 o'clock local time or 10 or 11 local time. So if she's catching the alley bird home, that's going to be a challenge getting there in time. Or is it just another Saturday night in the hotel near the airport, get up first thing Sunday morning, come back, and you lose 3 hours. So interesting for Casey. Okay, so that's what we're going to be doing with Casey every week is we're going to look at her game, have her put her coach's hat on for situations, because I had to ask about weight and passing because that has been driving me nuts, and how you can keep an eye on that as we go. So we'll keep an eye on that, but that's kind of what we're doing every week with KCD is we're going to look at her match, put the coach's hat on, and then take a look at individuals and growth and all this kind of stuff, and then get ready for her next match and have her talk about that. But another voice to talk about San Jose and Atlanta on Tuesday next week. That's going to be very cool.
Hi, I'm Steph, and I work at United Healthcare. When I think about United Healthcare's members, I think of my own family. My niece was diagnosed with an ultra-rare genetic disorder. I know how hard it is for families. At United Healthcare, we can make it easier.
I'm Brian. I care because I know what it's like to not speak the language. It's not easy. Health insurance is complicated. I would say our job is to make everything easy for our UHC members. I work for United Healthcare. I'm committed to care.
Nerds. Today's episode is sponsored by NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Personal finance can feel like a pop quiz you didn't study for. This podcast is your study guide. On NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast, you'll hear from trusted journalists who explain the why behind major financial decisions. You'll get research-backed insights and clear pros and cons, whether you're planning a big purchase or just want to grow your wealth. Make your next financial move with confidence. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast on your favorite podcast app.
When it comes to my policy, Farmers gives it to me straight, so there's no surprises.
It's your coverage. You should never be confused.
You hear that? An insurance provider with a conscience.
We're a choir, but yes, we have that too.
Straightforward coverage you can literally understand. That's what you get when
you have Farmers. Bum, 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 bum.
Learn more at Farmers.com. Underwritten by Farmers Truck or Fire Insurance Exchanges or Affiliate. Products not available in every state.
Baseball fans, think you know who's hitting a homer today? Well, FanDuel is giving you a free chance to call your shot with daily dingers. Joining the action is easy. Just make your free pick on who's hitting a home run in their game, and if you're right, you'll get a profit boost to use on your next bet for a chance at extra winnings. You've got nothing to lose and a lot to gain. And don't forget, you can make a free pick every day during the MLB season. It's just another reason why FanDuel is the home for home runs. So, are you ready to play your game today? Join all the action at FanDuel.com/podcast. That's FanDuel.com/podcast to play daily dingers and make your free pick on who's hitting a homer. Play ball and swing for the fences on FanDuel, an official partner of the MLB.
Must be 21 plus and present in Ohio. First online real money wager only. $5 first deposit required. A bonus issued as non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire 7 days after receipt. Restrictions apply. See terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
I'm Serena Williams, and I'm healthier on Row. I've lost 34 pounds in a year with GLP-1s, diet, and exercise. On Row, you can access GLP-1 options, including the first FDA-approved GLP-1 pill for weight loss. Go to row.co/journey to see if you qualify. 14 to 20% average weight loss in 1 year in non-diabetics with obesity or overweight with a weight-related medical condition versus 2.2% to 3.1% in placebo arm. RX only. To stay informed about serious side effects, go to row.co/safety.
Always great to find out where KCDB and what is on her mind when it comes to the world of soccer. You're listening to the best of SDHAM on the Soccer Down Here Network. John Nelson here with you. And next up, since we mentioned Houston and Chicago from the Apple TV perspective, we decided to go down that rabbit hole a little bit and find out what's going on with the Chicago Fire. And with the play-by-play voice of the Chicago Fire from WLS AM Radio, Max Anderson, get his perspective on what happened in Houston, what the Chicago Fire look like, a little bit of an update when it comes to the new stadium in and of itself and everything else going on where weather could be a challenge this weekend when it comes to not just the activity in Minnesota, but the activity on the lakefront in Chicago. Here's our conversation with Max Anderson. We go to Chicago. We find out what in the wide world of sports is going on with the Chicago Fire and the man with the flint, or maybe the two rocks that he's going to bang together and find out what's going on. He is our oracle up there. Max Anderson, play-by-play voice of the Fire, dropping by here this morning. Max Anderson, what up?
Mr. John, how are you, sir? Happy MLS soccer season.
You ain't kidding, brother. I'm digging the fireplace behind you. Thank you. It is not up and running this morning, which means that hopefully, and you've obviously got power, so that's obviously a good thing, so you don't have to have the fireplace running. Is the heat working? Heat's good?
Yeah, we're all good here. In fact, supposed to be 60 degrees on Friday, home opener on Saturday, maybe more towards the 40s, unfortunately, but it's been a chaotic winter for sure.
All right, so how chaotic has it been? Since you asked that question, I'll go ahead and ask it back. How chaotic has it been, sir? It's like match game all of a sudden.
You know, I think it was interesting because there were times last year I thought the Fire certainly played worse, and you didn't hear as harsh a comments from Greg Berhalter after the game, but he was direct after the game. He was not happy with what happened in the 2-1 loss to Houston. Felt like they didn't have an edge in the second half. First half, I mean, we were talking at halftime. It was as good of a first half as we saw from the Fire at any point last season. And then I don't know if it was, you know, the combination of the guys that were out or simply just kind of losing their legs in the first game. Just didn't have it in the second half. And Houston did have it at home and got a little jump from the home crowd. So I think frustrating way to start. I think Fire fans saw what they wanted to see and thought they were going to see in that first half, but then it just did not translate to that second half.
Okay, the absences I know included Andrew Gutman and Jonathan Bamba. For those
Jack Elliott as well, don't forget.
Right, and so when you don't have those three, how did it look with what Greg Berhalter had available to him, if I could get my upper plate to work? Without those three, how did the starting 11 look and how did they respond to one another?
Yeah, it got shifted around, right? You saw Zinkernagel really start the game more on the left, which we didn't see much at all last year. The plan coming into the year was for him to play a little bit more centrally this season with Brian Gutierrez departing, Anton Seletros, a little bit more of that holding midfield. What it looked like was some new pieces coming together, right? I mentioned Seletros, Robin Lund, the longtime Minnesota United All-Star just a couple of years ago. And then Mbigazelli and Bawazi in the back end, right? So you had three international players playing their first MLS minutes. I think there were, not Robin Lund, obviously, but between Seletros, Mbigazelli, and then DJ Johnny that came in later. And it looked like they were still learning the ropes of the MLS. A couple of times, maybe they thought some fouls that aren't fouls in the MLS, right? They're coming from different games abroad. So there's always that adjustment period when you get players from outside the MLS getting used to each other. So I think at the end of the day, you highlighted some of the injuries. Ultimately, even, you know, Jonathan Dean, while maybe not considered a starter every game, would have been a starter in that game, and he was also out. So they, you know, got to the point where, you know, Sam Rogers felt something in the second half, and they were down to their fourth and fifth center backs in game one. Never a great sign, right?
No.
So, you know, it was just a combination of things, and it's game one on the road. Don't want to overthink it too much. But it was interesting to hear Greg Berhalter as harsh as he was after the game.
And it's a match where Ugo Kuypers gets the first goal, and you end up with a 1-0 lead after 30. And then it was, you know, stuff at the back. There was the great pass that ended up with an equalizer that goes through a couple of lines and ends up with Guillerme's first. And then Guillerme ends up with a second, cleaning up after a quick parry and a save that that Chris Brady can't hang on to. When you look at that first 45 and the second 45, outside of those individuals that were there and weren't there, what's kind of stuck out to you now that you've had a couple of days to think about them?
I think what was interesting was, as much as anything, Philip Zinkernagel in a very different role. And I apologize, this entire interview here, I got a couple of dogs here that are.
We are a pet friendly environment, and they are as much associate producers as anybody else. As a matter of fact, the rowdy man doesn't want anything to do with the rain, and he is down.
Well, that's Ruby behind me, and then I've got Olive by my feet right now. So I apologize, but two dog household here. Mm-hmm. But Philip Zinkernagel, I think, was still getting used to playing a little bit different role than what he did last year, especially with some of the absences. I think he was being asked to do a little bit more in possession, which wasn't necessarily what he was doing as much of last year. He was able to be more creative, play more off the ball. And then the combination of him and Kuypers, as we know, was lethal last year, right? 32 goals between them. It really was a potent combination. I think ultimately it was a lot of new pieces. And then, you know, Greg talked about it in his postgame press conference. He thought, you know, we can't come out and play average soccer and think we can win in this league because we played below average soccer. And he was blunt about it. And like I said, at the open. So I think it was a good wake-up call after what was a good preseason, right? It, really, really nice down in Florida and then out in Coachella. All three of the names, key names you mentioned between Bamba, Jack Elliott, and Andrew Gutman were all back at practice. I think Gutman was more limited from what I saw from reporting, but does sound like they should get some pieces back this weekend, a home opener against a still very struggling Montreal team.
Yeah, we will get into that one coming up in just a sec. The new faces that came in here for 26, and some of them are logistical new faces, even though they're coming in from other places. One of the folks that has been of interest to me specifically is Jason Shukaluk. And since we are the home of the twos, we get to see, you know, MLS Next Pro up front and center, and we get to see development and players coming up from MLS Next Pro to become MLS soccer ready. When you look at someone like Jason, what are you thinking would be a successful year for him? He lit MLS Next Pro on fire and basically just decided, it's like, yep, I'm ready for my next step. What is your expectation for someone who was as prolific as he was in Next Pro now coming up to play with the first team?
I think that answer really depends on what the Fire do in the summer. You know, they still have the open DP spot. The Robert Lewandowski talk has not quieted down in any media circles. So I'm going to hedge this answer with, it really depends what happens this summer. So if I get clipped here, I want that to be clear.
we play full sound bites, brother. We don't clip.
But what is interesting about Shukaluk is obviously his scoring prowess last year, right? Golden Boot winner, signed the first team contract. The piece I think would have been more open for him if not for Chris Mueller coming back as well. And I know the club really trusts him, and they think, and I think he'll end up playing some of that Tom Barlow chaser role a little bit later on in games. Depth also matters. Ugo Kuypers was incredibly reliable last year, but we're, you know, year-to-year league in terms of injuries and everything. So knock on wood, he survived. So all that to say, I think there are people that are excited, and I do think he'll get some time, especially in attacking moments when they want to put more on the field early on. I think, barring injuries, it's going to be tough for him to get a lot of minutes from what I've seen so far, but reports out from Coachella were that he had a really nice preseason. The coaching staff seems to really like him, and his scoring prowess is pretty well known. So he'll get his opportunities. What he does with those opportunities is going to dictate, frankly, you know, how much more opportunities you get, because it's not wide open for him at the moment.
Yeah, cause and effect. So since you mentioned Lewandowski, I'll go ahead and go down into that section of the pool. How serious, I mean, are we like serious, or is this just still kind of kicking tires on something?
So, John, I'm going to disappoint your audience. I'm not that much of an insider when it comes to the sporting front office. Right. I do know some people around the team, and certainly reading kind of what's being said, it seems to be serious.
Okay.
Ultimately, getting somebody like Lewandowski, who still has a lot of wiggle left in his career, frankly, from what I've seen, what he's doing at Barcelona,
right.
It's a challenge, right? It's a long process. We saw it with De Bruyne last summer, how close the fire got. And apparently that was very close, like very, very close. So, you know, I know there's some familial decisions. Beyond that, I know it's a pursuit that's happening from all reporting that I've seen. I know kind of, unfortunately, nothing more than that at this point, but I think they have an open DP slot. And it seems like Greg has been taking a swing at that spot for another big landing piece.
Okay, and so then currently right now you're 2-4, right? So it's mm-hmm. basically flipping one of the U22s okay. into Garber Bucks, right?
Yeah, I'm not a roster sicko. I rely on a couple other people for that. From what I understand, that there's some easy moves that they could make to make a switch there. But beyond that, the roster thing in the MLS is still something after four seasons of following it closely that I'm nowhere near an expert in.
That's why I defer to others too.
Exactly.
So all things being equal, let me ask you this. Mm-hmm. All things being equal, everybody being healthy, the names that you mentioned, mm-hmm. the starting 11 of starting 11s mm-hmm. in neon as it's supposed to be. For what Greg Berhalter wants to do to be successful by the end of 90 minutes, I don't want to know about the star power. I want to mm-hmm. know about those integral pieces. Who do you think the integral pieces are that don't get a whole lot of spotlight for this overall success of Chicago Fire? Who would those folks be when it comes to putting the puzzle pieces together for the success of the Fire? Who are those second level dudes?
I think it's going to be defensively. Mm-hmm. This team's going to score, right? Greg Berhalter came in this league. They set a club record last year for goals, you know, second in the whole league. They could score. The problem last year was defensively, right? And could they keep the ball out of the net? And so the hype around Mbawazi is real. From what I saw for 90 minutes in his first action, totally see why everybody's excited, see why South African fans think he's going to end up in the Premier League and be, you know, a superstar. I see the writing on the wall there. I could see where this could be a short stint in MLS. A lot to prove still, 90 minutes only, but I see what everybody saw. That's one guy.
Mm-hmm.
Anton Selaitres is a really interesting piece that they brought in. They reshaped the midfield. Obviously, Brian Gutierrez is leaving. Kellen Costa didn't play much, you know, last year anyways, but he's also left. And they really changed the shape with Lude coming in, but also Selaitres, who's going to be that guy with Jay Davila that's going to control the middle of the pitch. So those are the three guys, the triangle, kind of in the middle of the field between Davila and Selaitres in that holding midfield, and how Mbawazi can hold up in his first MLS season next to Jack Elliott. They have, like we talked about, some depth in that middle area. You know, Mauricio Pineda is still a Fire player. They have some pieces that can play in the middle. But what those three do, Selaitres, Mbawazi, and Davila, that triangle in the middle, I think, is going to tell you a lot about where this Fire season can go.
Okay. I do want to ask about the stadium project coming mm-hmm. up as we go, but I want to go first to CF Montreal.
Mm-hmm.
And there are times when you look at them on the field, and to say that they are a dumpster fire might be insulting to dumpsters. And it's at the same time, you can't take them for granted, because they will come up and bite you if you kind of sit there and it's just like, it's CF Montreal, blah, blah, blah. When you went out to practice yesterday, what are your early vibes about Study Hall getting ready for this one on the weekend?
So like you said, right, every team wins 5, 6, 7 games a season at least, right? So they are going to win games. I don't think we've ever seen a defeated MLS season. Someone can correct me, but I don't think we have.
Yeah.
So they are going to win games. Yeah. And they, like you said, they can beat you. And that's one of the things we talk about in the MLS all the time is, you know, as bad as Kansas City even seems like they're going to be, and all the, you know, restructuring they're doing, they're going to win a couple games. So to your point, you have to come in focus. You don't necessarily have that winter advantage that you should have in Chicago on a Saturday, given Montreal's coming in. But you do have an advantage, and you should be getting some guys back in your home opener. And I do expect that they'll look better. I think things will look a little bit closer to that first half for a full game after they've had a chance this week to work on some things. And I do expect them to come out with a result, a winning result at that. But like you said, anything can happen on a Saturday in the MLS, and certainly we'll see what the weather conditions end up being. Like I said, looking like 40s, but I haven't checked the wind yet, and that can always change things on the lakefront at Soldier Field.
Oh, you ain't kidding. I mean, seriously, for those who've never been to Soldier Field, and I guess this is my pseudo transition into the new stadium project questions, how would you describe the wild card that Soldier Field can be when it comes to a game in Major League Soccer? Because we've seen goals that have been like massive 19-yard left-to-right swings if it gets caught up in the breeze. I mean, how much of a wild card and an intangible can Soldier Field become on a game day?
Well, it was Kellen Acosta against Montreal on St. Patrick's Day a couple of years ago, one of the wilder MLS goals of all time, right? So certainly things can happen. You know, I think Soldier Field, first of all, as a lifelong Chicagoan, season to Bears ticket holder, grew up a Fire fan in my youth and then focused more on American football in my adolescence. But a special place on the lakefront. It's a special setting. The stadium, yeah, it needs some work. As someone who goes there all the time for professional and personal purposes, I understand why the Bears are looking. But it's an awesome venue right on the lakefront. If you have a choice to go to a road city, we know the history of Wrigley and U.S. Cellular guaranteed rate, excuse me, and what that
brings. It's Comiskey. They ain't paying you.
Fair. What Comiskey and Wrigley bring to the summertime in Chicago and the types of trips people like to take. Soldier Field's another one of those. If you're thinking about, hey, I want to visit an MLS city, and you haven't had a chance to come to Chicago, especially if you get a game against the Fire in May, or in this case, probably not till late July, especially those summer games, strongly recommend it. The pitch itself is a FOOTBALL put pitch, right? It is designed for American football over football, right? So it's a little bit tighter quarters on the sides at times. But overall, the historical stereotypes about the turf at Soldier Field have been much better over the last 5 to 6 years. Since the last Bears general manager came in and really kind of took control with the Park District, that's changed a good amount from what the historical norm of Soldier Field has been. But ends up getting, I think, pretty close to leading the league in attendance in a pretty big stadium. So expect a pretty good turnout for the home opener, and I think it'll be a positive result.
So then the new stadium project, for those that aren't as up on it as you are, explain the differences, and obviously Joe Mansueto wanting his own barn. I get it. So the new stadium project, where is it by comparison geographically, and what is it bringing to the table?
Sure. So geographically, not too far, still in downtown Chicago in an area called the 78, which is like south, just south of the Loop and a little bit west of the Loop, like southwest edge of the Loop. It's self-funded. I mean, that's a pretty popular topic, is how stadiums are funded these days, especially in Chicago, and always a conversation between the White Sox, the Bears, and what was the Fire, until Joe Mansueto grabbed the bull by the horn and said, I'll just pay for it myself. I don't need the state. So kudos to him for stepping up as a true champion of Chicago and saying, I'm taking this on and doing it. 22,000 seat stadium from everything I've read. They just opened the Dear Chicago experience, where fans can go and actually experience what suites would look like and what the luxury spaces will look like as they try to, you know, sell towards the new stadium and sell packages. Excuse me. So 22,000 soccer specific stadium, plans to make it multi-use for other things as well, but obviously primarily for the Fire. I don't know if people realize every season since the Fire moved back to Soldier Field, they wait until about mid-May till the NFL releases their schedule, and three or four games end up getting rescheduled from Soldier Field out to SeatGeek and review. So the multitude of reasons why they wanted this to happen. And, you know, since Joe Mansueto bought the team in 2019, he's done nothing but invest in it, from you know, money for DPs to this stadium project. He's really brought back, you know, the financial engine that you need to compete in modern soccer. We're seeing it all around the league. If you're going to build these stadiums, if you're going to get the top players, you got to invest. And that's why the Fire have been in on the likes of Neymar 2 summers ago, De Bruyne this summer or this past summer, and maybe Lewandowski now from all public.
I still think 22,000 is too small. That's just me. I think in this day and age, I think you've got to be closer to 30 if you're going to be getting larger soccer events and things like that, especially with how MLS is growing. I digress.
Fair point.
So a couple of random questions before we go. Are the Bears going to Indiana or are they going to stay in Chicago?
No. They'll be in Arlington Heights.
Because, you know, Hammond that was kind of sitting there and waving their hand and going, hey, you know, you can come here and everything will be cool.
I can speak more freely on this one as just a Bears fan, right? I do not think that George McCaskey's first move as patriarch of the Bears is to move the Bears to Hammond, Indiana after his grandfather so desperately wanted to move the team back to Arlington Heights in the 70s. Never happened. They ended up doing multiple deals on the lakefront. But they've been eyeing Arlington Heights property for two generations to move the Bears out there. And to think that his first move as patriarch, George McCaskey, is to move the Bears out of the state of Illinois, you know, the pride and joy of Illinois, until shovels are breaking dirt, and even then, I'm going to say it's a head fake that they're going to Arlington Heights.
Then my last question for you, best pizza place.
I have a hot take on this one. Chicago pizza, I don't think is very good. Deep dish pizza is not the same thing. I don't think that's what you're asking. If that's what you're asking, Giordano's, that's what I've had my entire life. I grew up 3 blocks away from a Giordano's, and when it was pizza night, it was Giordano's. So that was my my pizza. But I do love Max and Izzy's out here in Lincoln Park. But New York wins the pizza race. The people that are still fighting that Chicago is better pizza than New York, give that one up. We're the hot dog capital. We're happy to be the hot dog stand on every corner place and the overall food mecca. We don't have pizza. New York can have it.
Now, broadcast plans for you, sir, if you would please cut the promo for us so we can listen to what's going on with you, not just this weekend, but every weekend.
Yeah, absolutely. Appreciate it. Well, obviously on WLS 890, home of the Chicago Fire English radio broadcasts, our fourth season on WLS and home game simulcasted on Apple TV. So that's always fun. Huge change there. I don't know if that's been a topic on your show or not, John, but the opening of the paywall on Apple TV, you know, no longer having to have the double paywall for the MLS. Huge, huge deal that got worked out. Really excited to see how that drives excitement, especially World Cup break. Assuming the U.S. men's national team can put up an anywhere decent performance, I think it opens up a unique opportunity for the MLS to capture, you know, some soccer fever and keep people watching MLS. So I hope they're ready to go on that front. Yeah. 890 WLS here in Chicago, simulcasted for home games, for Fire home games. You can hear me and my new partner, Joe Chats on
WLS. Now, wait a second. What's the name of the station again?
WLS AM 890.
Whoa, wait a second. There's a certain delivery that you have to do with the call letters, isn't there?
WLS AM 890.
WLS, don't you have to?
Of course, you have
to sing it. It's got to come from the diaphragm.
That is the news side of WLS. I forgot that's in the contract. You're right, John. That's on me.
As always, it's great to see you, my friend. And thanks for keeping an eye on our favorite little ball of hate, Johnny Dean from Stratford Academy.
He's gonna be back this weekend. Looking
all right,
forward
be good.
To
we'll see you soon. I know that two folks either want to go out or two folks want to be fed, and then I know that you're on with your day.
I fed him right before, and now it's time to go
all right,
out.
Be
so
good.
Thanks.
We'll see you soon.
All right.
There goes Max Anderson, everybody, play-by-play voice of Chicago Fire. And, yes, it is WLS. You have to sing it. It's 890. You have to sing the logo. Okay. And we have zero issue with co-pilots when it comes to segments that we have here on SDHAM. Once again, thanks to our guests, Ted Ramey, Casey White, and Max Anderson, to get you ready for match week number two in MLS. And once again, don't forget, as you follow along on Apple TV, you can listen to the local providers. You can go to the audio option and go to local play-by-play. We need to work on having both home and away audios available to us when it comes to MLS product on Apple TV. But once again, local products, you can have that option, and you can find that out using your arrow keys and your audio picks on Apple TV when it comes to the audio options for Mike and Jason. When it comes to the Atlanta United perspective of things, 92.9 The Game on the Odyssey app, and you can sync up your TV on the visiting side as well. Once again, thanks for being a part of us here at SDH Monday through Friday, whether it's with Morning Espresso, whether it's with SDHAM, whether it's with our live content, whether it is public appearances that we get to do out in the community, or high school soccer brought to us by our friends at Kaiser Permanente, Atlanta United 2 Soccer, and MLS Next Pro, which is coming up this weekend to start the 2026 season. It's all there for you. SDHAM on the Soccer Down Here Network. Once again, for Jason, for Jarrett, for Nick, for Maddie, for Sophia, I'm John Nelson. Thanks for dropping by. That is the best of SDHAM. Mucha plata, y'all. Play it safe. We will catch up with you again next week.
Hi, I'm Steph, and I work at United Healthcare. When I think about United Healthcare's members, I think of my own family. My niece was diagnosed with an ultra-rare genetic disorder. I know how hard it is for families. At United Healthcare, we can make it easier.
I'm Brian. I care because I know what it's like to not speak the language. It's not easy. Health insurance is complicated. I would say our job is to make everything easy for our UHC members. I work for United Healthcare. I'm committed to care.
Girl, let's get real. Some pads are just diapers with a good PR team, but not the new Kotex BioCare. That's because Kotex BioCare helps defend against odor and irritants. And it's the first and only pad with this pH proactive system that helps optimize the pad's pH. Just think of it as self-care for down there. Check out Kotex.com for more details on the all-new Kotex, completely redesigned to meet your needs. You asked, we heard.
Nerds.
Today's episode is sponsored by NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Personal finance can feel like a pop quiz you didn't study for. This podcast is your study guide. On NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast, you'll hear from trusted journalists who explain the why behind major financial decisions. You'll get research-backed insights and clear pros and cons, whether you're planning a big purchase or just want to grow your wealth. Make your next financial move with confidence. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast on your favorite podcast app.
Amazon Music has everything you want to listen to. Music, podcasts, and now audiobooks. All in one app. Amazon Music Unlimited. Audiobooks included.
Introducing the all-new MLB Plus, your ticket to streaming baseball's best.
Let's go!
Enjoy MLB Network 24/7 with live out-of-market games and award-winning shows. Enhanced game nights with MLB Big Inning, live and commercial-free. And hear live home and away radio broadcasts of every game, blackout-free. Even stream minor league games all season. It's all here and it's all new. Get MLB Plus for just $59.99 a year. Visit MLB.com/MLB Plus.